John R. is our speaker, and let's give him a big 7 o'clock, let's rock, welcome.
Hi, I'm John. And I've been a member of Al-Anon for a long, long time, and what a fun meeting. My goodness. I knew I was immediately at Al-Anon when I came in, and everybody was talking and nobody was listening. I have to tell you a little story that I got to town a little bit early and went down the street to a restaurant to have a bowl of soup before the meeting started, because I'm not on this guy's diet. Where is he? There you are. Happy birthday. And there's a group of people in there just having a wonderful time. I said to myself, they got to be Al-Anon. They got to be. So I finished my bowl of soup and I came over here. And as I look out the door, here they all come. So we definitely give ourselves away by all the fun we have in recovery. I'd like to welcome the new people. I'm glad you're here. I'd like to state a little disclaimer. Anything I state tonight is simply my opinion. I'm not an authority on Al-Anon. I do not represent Al-Anon. I'm just a member sharing my experience, strength, and hope. The facts of our program are in the literature. And so if I say something and you don't like it, remember I said it, Al-Anon didn't. Having said that, I feel a little bit like Elizabeth Taylor's seventh husband. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm just trying to find a way to make it interesting. I can tell many of you are deprived in many ways. That's what makes Al-Anon fun. We can be who we are. I came to Al-Anon after being an Alateen, and I want to thank the people who are doing some Alateen stuff. That's wonderful stuff. I had a little problem in Alateen. I am a double winner. And our Alateen sponsor, Bonnie, God rest her soul, used to say to me, John, the break is not for going out and smoking a joint. Nor are we supposed to be getting drunk. Alcoholism doesn't just run in my family, it practically gallops. I grew up in a rather violent alcoholic home. My mother was the alcoholic. My dad left before I was 1 year of age, and I always took the blame for that. I always felt somehow I was responsible for him leaving. If it would have been my brother, he would have left after my brother was born, but it was after I was born he split, so I knew immediately it was something I had done. And I carried that for a long time. Part of my disease is I pick up guilt that's not mine and shame that's not mine. I don't know if you can relate to this, but I could be in a grocery store and two aisles over a baby start crying and I want to leave because I know I'm going to get the blame. And those were the feelings I came in with. In our home, our mother used to put a little booze in our bottles at night to help us sleep as babies. And if we were still a little too rambunctious, we got half a Valium. So I had a very tranquil childhood, to say the least. But I knew early on that our house was different than the other houses in the neighborhood. One of the symptoms of that was we had the police and paramedics at our house on a regular basis. They were almost at our house more than they were at Winchell's. I think if we had started making donuts, we could have made a profit. I learned three things in that house. Don't trust, don't talk, don't feel. I learned that early on. Because if you talked, there was a real price to pay for that. And if you trusted, you know, today's confidence is tomorrow's ammunition. And you only have to get burned a few times before you learn better than that. And I can remember being in the schoolyard with my brother, who's 2 years my senior. I'm the caboose. I was the last one. And the bullies on the block had us on the floor, and they were beating us up because they wanted to know why the police and paramedics had been in our house the night before. And I wouldn't give it up. And I can remember at some point hearing my brother say, well, Mom got drunk, she got crazy, and the police and paramedics came. That's all there is to it. And I can remember thinking to myself, how weak. You're going to get beat up anyhow. Why give it up? But he knew something I didn't know, and that is the more you keep the secrets in, the sicker you get. And so he kept letting the secrets out, and I kept keeping them in and getting sicker and sicker. And As I mentioned, I'm a double winner, both AA and Al-Anon. I'm not going to talk too much about the drinking because this is Al-Anon. But it is part of my story. And it was part of how I coped. You know, I needed something to take that edge off. And one of the things I did very early on was I got very involved in live theater. And I did it for a couple of reasons. One, as long as I was on stage, I could be somebody else. I didn't have to be me. And I wanted it on my skin so bad it hurt. I had no problem playing somebody else. Playing me, I had no idea who that was. But I was good at playing characters. And the other reason I was so involved in theater was I could have all the booze I wanted for free at cast parties. He didn't care about the fact I was underage. And so it worked out very well for me. I did get into the other program at age 14. I was like the tomcat having a love affair with a skunk. I didn't get all I wanted, but got all I could stand. And life didn't get better. It got a little worse. In addition to my mother's alcoholism, there's a lot of other insanities in addition to it, which I won't go into too much, but I was greatly affected by. And so by the time I was 14, because I got sober, she figured you're old enough to get sober, you're old enough to live on your own. So I've basically been on my own since 14. But before that, I can remember where, almost to the precise moment when I stopped trusting people completely. I know I've shared this with you before. I had a dog I was very close to. Can't trust people, but you can trust animals, you know? And I had this dog since I was maybe 6, 7 years old. And my mother, I was maybe 12, 13 at the most at the time. And my mother said to me one day, your dog has mange, it has to be put down. Now, at that age, I had no idea what mange was. I didn't know it meant it had fleas, you know? So in her insanity, she made me feed the dog sleeping pills and listen with a stethoscope until the dog died, and then had to bury the dog. Yes, I drank over that, to say the least. But at that point, something broke in me. Something broke. And that affected a lot of relationships for a lot of years. I just wouldn't let you get close to me. Because I knew if you got close, something would happen. You'd either die or leave, you know. And I picked up this image of me that if I could leave, I would too. I understood when relationships ended. I thought, well, if I can get out of this thing, I'd get out of this thing too. I mean, by the time I was 13, I'd already tried suicide and failed. Talk about feeling like a failure, like a loser, you know, fail that. And I did. So I came with a lot of issues, you might say, and a lot of trust issues. I had stopped going to Alateen and Al-Anon for a few years, and you can sure tell it by my relationships. You know, and what do they say? Two sickies don't make a welly. You know. And I discovered something in recovery is we don't attract alike. And we don't attract opposite. We attract what we think we deserve on a subconscious level. Not conscious. If it's conscious, I don't want that. But on a subconscious level. And I always brought people into my life who, from the time we got together, were on their way out the door. You know. And if somebody did stay for any period of time, I knew there was something seriously wrong with them. And maybe I should leave. You know. I'm a retread when it comes to marriage. I've been married twice, which when I tell you a little bit about what I do for a living, you'll find out how that could be very bad. But my first marriage, I married very young. And I didn't marry out of love. I married out of need. She wasn't bad and I wasn't bad. But we both married out of need. How can you recognize love when you've never really seen it? You know? When love always comes with strings. If you love me, you'll do this. If you love me, you won't be such a rotten kid. If you love me, you wouldn't be here in the first place. You know, we were told that growing up, we were told that on a regular basis. One of my mom's favorite games to play is find another place to live, you know. She would take my brother and I, we'd be 5-6 years old, and drop us off on a freeway on-ramp over in San Bernardino. I grew up in Ontario, but she'd take us out to San Bernardino, drop us off on an off-ramp or on-ramp and say, I never wanted to have children to begin with. Stay here till somebody who wants kids comes along. And we'd be there 3-4 hours, and she'd sober up enough to realize, the police may not be too hip with this. And she'd come back and get us and then tell us all the way home how we've ruined her life by being born. And so it's a little tough to have healthy relationships. A little tough. Because I bought into it. You know, I don't blame my mother for my life today, but I do see where I bought into the message. And that's one thing that Al-Anon has helped me with, to see where I bought into the message so I don't have to keep buying into that message. You know, she wasn't a bad person. She was a wounded person, a sick person. And she did what sick people do. You know, Viktor Frankl was a wonderful psychologist. And he, Jewish man who was in Auschwitz. And one day he ran into somebody he had been in the camp with. And he asked him, he says, you ever think about our days in the camp? He says, I do, and I hate those Nazis every day. I hate them to hell every day. He said, then you're still their prisoner. And what Al-Anon does for me at a day at a time is help me no longer be a prisoner in that situation. I can't be a prisoner until I learn to love. And for a long time, I thought it was really her I needed to learn to forgive, and it wasn't. It was me. See, I've always been able to forgive other people, but I never knew how to forgive John. You know, and I grew up a little bit physically, not so much emotionally, but physically. And as I said, I went to that first, you know, relationship of marriage that lasted for 7 years, and it was just chaos, just chaos. How do you have a good relationship when you don't know how to love? When you don't know how to get out of self, when you have so many needs and you think, you know, it's almost like, you know, those of us with Al-Anonism, as I like to call it, you know, we're born, the doctor cuts the umbilical cord, and instead of letting it go, we grab and try to plug it into people, say, you're going to make me feel secure, you're going to take care of my finances, you're going to make me feel loved. Mercy. And it's hard to have a relationship with someone you're always trying to plug your cord into. That too. In my family, I was always the peacemaker. I was the comedian. I know you can't tell that. I never showed my feelings. I always smiled on the outside while dying on the inside. I always tried to be the fix it. And I was always the worrier and the guilt person. I knew if somehow I could be a better kid, this wouldn't be happening. If somehow I could be more than I was, if I could be smarter, if I could have been good looking, if I could have all these things, it would have been better. But because I'm not, it's my fault. And I got to find a way to fix it. By the time I was 15, I was already working on my first ulcer. I mean, I was in pain all the time. And it was all from emotions. All from emotions. And I couldn't tell a soul about it. Even though I was sober by that time, I think I really started getting honest when I started going to Al-Anon. I mean, I was as honest as I could be in the other program. I really was. I did as thorough fourth and fifth step as I could. But I could only be as honest with you as I was with me. And I've been lying to me for a long time. You know, I was the last person I wanted to consult about the truth because I didn't know what it was. I wasn't trying to deceive people, but how do you tell the truth if you don't know what the truth is? You know, I've always been the class clown, and that was to hide the fact that I was dyslexic. Now, I didn't know I was dyslexic. I was just told I was retarded. Some people say that wasn't too far off. But they always said I was retarded. In between my junior and senior year of high school, my sponsor in the other program said, you know what, I don't think it's intelligence. I think you have a problem with your eyes, that you have so much trouble reading. You know, all the time I'd done theater, I never read a script. I'd hear a line once, it was memorized. And I've memorized the entire show. I could do the entire show just from hearing it one time. And so I was tested and found out that I have dyslexia. And that was the first time I ever heard I wasn't stupid. The psychologist, Dr. Ron Devikoski, wonderful man, he brought me in. He says, you know, you have severe dyslexia. He said, you're not supposed to be able to take an IQ test because it's so severe. He says, but even so, you came out at about 135, 140, which means you're really about 170. I about fell out of my chair. He said, but you'll never be able to go to college because your dyslexia is so severe. Well, God knew something that Ron didn't. And when I did finally get classes the way that I could relate to them, mostly through lecture, I went from being a DNF student to an AB average. And I graduated high school on time, but actually 3 credits over. And I said to my sponsor, I said, I have a crazy dream. I want to go to college. I want to go to seminary. Now you know why divorce is such a bad deal. I'm an Orthodox priest. You know, they're a little bit skittish about that kind of thing. You know, trying to teach them a little understanding. Oh, thank you. Yes, I could always use another drink. Thank you. I appreciate you didn't put ice in this one. I know you're trying to be nice with the ice, but I have a thing about ice. I had 13 martinis one night, and they put ice in the last one. I was sick the next day. Some of you truly understand that. But anyhow, I said to my sponsor, I want to go to school and I want to go to seminary. Now, this is a guy who came into recovery with 2 feelings towards God. One, I was scared to death, and 2, I had a resentment. He dealt me a bad hand. And my sponsor taught me to pray to whoever it may concern in case of, because I had so many issues. But I found something in recovery. I found something. Bless you. And that'd be a dollar. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry, I'm used to being at work. Remember, I said that in a complete sentence. Anyhow, he said to me, you can quit tomorrow, but you go today. You can do anything you want to do as long as you're willing to pay the price. And to my shock, and to many other people's shock, I got accepted into school. And I started going to school. Now, Chuck C used to say, if there's anything worse for us than bad luck, it's good luck. And that's really been my experience. And the reason being is when I start getting good luck, I stop doing the things that are important. Stop going to meetings, stop working with newcomers, stop being in touch with my sponsor. And they told me a long time ago, anything you put in before your recovery will either die or leave. And that's been my experience. And lost a lot of stuff because I was so busy trying to become something. And the reason I was trying to become something was because if I become something, you'll love me. Boy, is that a false notion. But I didn't know it at the time. I did graduate. I did receive my ordination. I think they sometimes question that. I got to tell you, I was on the way over here tonight listening to a radio program I sometimes listen to, and they I can't go anywhere without getting in trouble somehow. It follows me, and usually at my own doing. And I'm listening to this radio program, and they're talking about something that this teacher had done that was awfully embarrassing. I won't repeat it, but it was a keeper. And so they asked people to call in and share something embarrassing that they have done. You know, sent a bad email or whatever. And so I call in thinking nobody's going to hear this. Now, I'm on the way here tonight doing this. You know? And I said I'd accidentally sent a dirty joke to a nun. And, which I did. And ain't no sooner air it, my cell phone rings, and it's a priest I know. He says, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself." And I'm his sponsor. So as you can see, I still continue to get in trouble. I haven't ascended being human yet. I keep working at it. That relationship I talked about earlier, marriage, it ended in disaster. 3 kids later, they're all grown now. I figure one of the two of us ought to, they ought to, or I should, so I let them grow up. And that was painful. Now, fortunately, it happened before my ordination. Otherwise, I would not have been able to be in the priesthood. I was able to get dispensation for it. In the Orthodox, you're allowed a couple marriages. We are a little human about that. They're just not too keen about people going in the priesthood doing that, and you really have to go through a lot of paperwork and stuff. I've discovered in the church there's no problem so big that paperwork can't make a little crazier. I figure when I get to heaven, there's going to be a big fax machine. All saying, "Why did you do this?" But by this time, I started getting healthier. I started being able to bring this stuff home a little bit. And like I said, she wasn't bad, I wasn't bad. It was doomed from the beginning. We weren't in love, we were in need. And there's a big difference in the two. She remarried to somebody she's been married to since, and they've been just absolutely ecstatic together. And and I found somebody too. I just celebrated 19 years of marriage with my current wife. And, which goes to prove I can always find somebody sicker than me. I'm just kidding. To put up with me. No, she's a wonderful woman. Our son just turned 18, and I think he's going to live. No, he's a good kid. We do a lot of stuff together. And what you've taught me to do is to bring love home. You taught me if you want love in your house, you take it there. Chuck used to tell us, "You are what you're giving away." And I can remember one time talking to my sponsor. And I said to him, I know what's been missing in my life. It's been love. I've not known what it is to be loved. And it was a true statement. I have never known what it is to feel love. And he says, "I'm going to tell you how to do that." He says, "When you hang up this phone, I don't ever want you to go out looking for love again." He said, "Love is a divine paradox. When you go out to get, you come back empty. And when you go out to give, you come back overflowing." And that's what Al-Anon has taught me. If you want love, you got to put it there. You got to be that which you're looking for. And you taught me how to do that. And I can't do it with "I want, I like, I need, I have to have." I can only do that with, "How can I be of service to you? How can I make your day a little better?" And I have a wonderful wife. I really do. She does things that a lot of wives... It's hard to be a priest's wife. It really is, especially if you're in competition with altar boys. I'm kidding. I'm just joking. I'm joking. Good thing we have confessions on Saturdays. We are running a special at my church. If you bring pictures, we give you a coupon for 2 free sins. I'm kidding. I wouldn't make a whole lot of copies of tonight's CD. No, seriously. She's a wonderful woman. And quite often I get called out to go to hospitals at night and go to crisis calls at night. And I'll come home, and she will have gotten out of bed and fixed me a little snack because she figured I might be a little hungry. Fix a lot of snacks. But that's another program. She's very understanding. She knows that I'm gone quite a bit. She knows that sometimes I get a little moody because, like this morning, I had to bury a 2-year-old. Which, today I don't deny my feelings. See, I can do that today because you taught me the art of compassion. You taught me how to put my arm around somebody else and not have to have the right answer, but just to shut up and love them. And that's what I did with these parents. You know, when I went to visit them, they asked why. I said, I don't know. See, you taught me how to say I don't know. Before I would have had to make something up.
Got to sound knowledgeable. After all, they gave you a degree.
And my sponsor cured me of that one time of talking about my degrees. He says, you know, degrees are what they put on rectal thermometers. You know, I was really proud. I finally got my doctorate, right? You know, I'm not even supposed to go to college to get my doctorate. And he tells me this. He says, that's not who you are. Took me a while before I heard it. That's not who you are. See, Al-Anon introduces me to John, the person I'd ran from all my life. You know, how could I be comfortable with other people if I wasn't even comfortable with me? You taught me how to be comfortable with John. And the way that I get comfortable with John is by no longer faking it. I know we hear around the program, fake it till you make it, fake it. No. I came to Al-Anon because I had to stop faking it. You know, I say it quite often that dying doesn't scare me. I don't have a fear of death. What terrifies me is the idea of dying without living first. And that's what was happening to me. I was going through life not living. I was existing. I was surviving. I was just getting through. I'm just hanging on with my knuckles. For God's sake, I'll just get through another day. Smile and maybe they won't notice. And I can remember sitting with my sponsor and I couldn't do it anymore. And the tears started coming. I was raised, you don't cry. You cry, I'll give you a reason to cry. You know. And if you get in a fight, you better win. Otherwise, you're going to get your butt kicked twice. There when you got home. And this was my mom. That's embarrassing. So you learn to be tough. And you learn to not let anybody in. And slowly but surely, the people in Al-Anon started getting in. And I started being able to show you who I really am. And not have to impress you. Not have to impress you. Not have to be anybody other than who I am. That has taken a long time. To be completely in my relationship at home. Do you know what it is? Some of you do, to be married 19 years to the same person. And not be headed out the door. Not be saying, well, you know, if you don't do this right, you know, I got to go. You know, to walk through good times and bad times. To be able to say, I was wrong. You know, that's almost a sin to have to admit to your wife you're wrong about something. Holy cow. Let alone your son. But today I can say I was wrong. Because of Al-Anon, I have a very close relationship with my son who's 18. He serves the altar at my church. He's 18 now. He doesn't have to do that anymore. But he's there every Sunday. And tonight before I came here, as I'm walking out the door, I said, son, I love you. He said, dad, I love you too. He still kisses the old man on the neck. Now that may not mean anything to anybody here. But I wouldn't give you $2 million for it. It's a gift that you gave me. I didn't earn it. You gave it to me. My son doesn't know what it is to be afraid of me. He doesn't know what it is to be afraid of me. You broke the chain. You know, this last year he went through his first heartbreak. And he was walking across the living room. And I can see he just wasn't okay. And I said, son, are you all right? And he turned to me and said, dad, I'm not. I'm really hurting. See, he doesn't know what it is to have to hide his emotions from dad. And that's because of you. And he came over and he told me about it. And I held him while he cried, and I cried with him. I said, some days life just sucks. You know, and it's okay. And I held him. He was 17 years old. You know, thank you, Al-Anon. Thank you, Al-Anon. Thank you, Al-Anon. Because you taught me how to be compassionate with my son. I had a sponsor who used to call my house and ask, is John bringing the program home? Because if he's not bringing the program home, he doesn't have a program. I don't care what he does for a living. And I don't care how many places he speaks. And I don't care how many people he sponsors. If he doesn't bring it home, he doesn't have a program. And my wife will give me up quick. She doesn't go to Al-Anon. And so I had to start taking it home. I'm so glad for that. You know, I wouldn't trade my wife for anybody else. Wouldn't trade her for anybody else. It's my best friend. I was telling her on our 19th anniversary, I said, these have been the best 19 years of my life. I wouldn't trade this relationship for anything, not even happiness. I'm kidding. You can make three less discs now. Every good thing that's in my life is a direct result of program. You know, today I have a playful relationship with my God. And what I love about Al-Anon is you get a God of your understanding. Not of my understanding, not of someone else's understanding. Your understanding. That's good enough. You know. The other thing I love about Al-Anon is we have no professional class. We have no hierarchy. The highest you could become is a trusted servant. And you're a servant. And the highest you get to be is your full self. You know, some days better than others. Some days better than others. Today I learned to live with John just as John is, warts and all. Sometimes I make awful mistakes. And I hate it. I'd love to stand here and say, you know, it just doesn't bother me. It does. But I no longer crucify myself the way I used to. You know, my sponsor used to always say to me, get off the cross, we need the wood. You know, because I was a self-proclaimed martyr in life. I didn't know it, but I was. You know, because everything that happened was my fault. Every bad thing had to be my fault. And I never realized how egotistical that was. You know, now I am convinced that my ego will outlive me. It keeps coming back in different forms. And I am convinced that when I die, 2 weeks later, they'll then bury my ego. Because it will outlive me. But I'm okay with that today. It's the way it is. I can't do anything about it. We talk about the steps. And for a while in my area, there's a big thing between step 6 and 7, people saying, I'm working on this character defect. I'm working on this shortcoming. And I remember Blanche saying one time, a great member of Al-Anon in my opinion, she says, all you people who are working on your character defects and shortcomings, I guess that gives you something to do while you're waiting for God to remove them. That's my Al-Anonism. I'm still trying to control it when I'm trying to remove these things. You know? I've always been taught the 7-step prayer of the big book, and it says, my creator, I'm ready that you shall have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. If it doesn't stand in the way of my usefulness to him and my fellows, he's probably not going to remove it that day. You know? Like when I'm calling radio shows and other priests are listening. I didn't think he got that station way out where he was. God does have humor. You know, step 1 says there's no hope. Step 2 says there's hope. If you read them, step 1 says there's no hope. Step 2 says there's hope. So how do I get from no hope to hope? My experience has been I can't write my way from no hope to hope. I can't walk my way from no hope to hope. I get infected with your hope. I get carried from no hope to hope. Step 1, I have to admit, I'm totally hopeless. And then I go from being totally hopeless to realizing I was just helpless. And then I can accept your help a little bit. Not a whole lot at first, but a little bit. I was willing to believe that you believe. And then step 3, oh my God, I got to turn this over to something. And when I first saw that, I thought, oh, I, better go study a whole lot. That's not why I became a priest. But I thought I'd better get real educated on this stuff. My experience with God was my mom would get drunk and take us to all the churches in town and then beat the heck out of us on the way home and say, if there's a God, why didn't he stop that from happening? So I had a couple issues, you know, with this God thing. And my sponsor was ever so gentle. He says, give it time. You don't have to be a theologian. Let it be revealed. And he taught me a little prayer. God, reveal yourself to me in my life in a way that I will understand. And I tried that for a while. And it started working. It was a good prayer. And then I got into step four a little bit. And, you know, there was a lot there. And my first attempt at a fourth step was a garbage list. And my sponsor was very patient. And I brought to him this garbage list. And he listened very patiently and he said, that was a nice garbage list. How about if we do a fourth step now? So we out the book and we did a fourth step. And I was really having a good time doing this because I love writing about the resentments. I love writing about what you did to me, how I'm affected. And then somebody called on the phone. They said, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm writing my fourth step. They said, did you get to the fourth column yet? I said, no, there's only three columns on that page. They said, turn the page. And I didn't like what I saw on the other page. Putting out our minds the other person had done, we resolutely look for our own mistake. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or afraid? Now, I don't know about you, but that takes a lot of fun out of it. It really does. I was having a much better time before they called. But something magical happened. I got to see where the problem was. And in sharing it with my sponsor, I got to see that I wasn't so bad. He had done some of these things too and thought some of these things and blamed other people for a long time too. And then again, we talked about 6 and 7. And then I got into 8. And then with 9. And one thing my sponsor made real clear to me, it says, made the amends to other people except when to injure them or others. He says, you're not an other. You make the amends. And what I found in that is freedom. I didn't have to hide anymore. I had been hiding all my life. And then 10, 11, and 12. And in 10, 11, and 12, I discovered the Rule 62, which they have in the 12 and 12 from AA, which is don't take yourself so damn serious. You know, I take recovery serious. I don't take me serious. And that's been a good deal for me. You know, I have a friend in the program, Tom W., and some of you have probably heard him speak. He's a wonderful member of the program. And Tom's one of those guys that helped me find my calling to go into the priesthood. And one day he was sharing this, that he kept asking people, do you think I'm normal? And I used to do that too. That's why I relate to it. And he'd asked a therapist one day, and the therapist turned to him and said, normal is 98.6. He says, what I think you need to be asking is, am I healthy? And he says, a healthy person can do 3 things. A healthy person can work. A healthy person can play. A healthy person can love. A healthy person can work, a healthy person can play, a healthy person can love. These are the things that the steps and Al-Anon have taught me. Work has never been a problem. I've always been an overachiever. And one of the things in Al-Anon is sometimes I need your help in knowing when I'm working too much because I tend to do that. I have a tendency to take on more than I really can. 3 years ago, against everybody's advice, I was made bishop. And given a diocese, and you don't think I doubled up on my Al-Anon meetings? I don't know if you know this or not, but there's some issues in the church. But don't tell anybody because we don't talk about it. And am I affected by other people's drinking? Yes. And if I don't go to Al-Anon on a regular basis, some bad decisions could be made on a regular basis. So I start doubling down on my Al-Anon and other meetings too. I used to have a red beard.
Mercy. I'm going to have to make a date with Miss Clairol, you know? And learning how to not have to fix them. I do what I'm supposed to do. They do what they're supposed to do. My first year as bishop, I had to fire two priests. One of them was my best friend because they were breaking the law. And fortunately, it wasn't anything to do with children or anything sexual, but it was some stuff that was bad news. And I had to do what I had to do because you taught me. We do the footwork. We do what we're supposed to do. We don't hide. And so we did that. And I had to contact my superior and say, I have to do this. And I need your support. And we had to do that. And that was tough. And thank God for the people in Al-Anon. You walked me through that. 2 years ago, my dad died. I finally met him in sobriety. I met him 19, almost 20 years ago. And in recovery, I got to meet him. And when he died, I got to officiate his funeral. What was more important than that was when he died, I didn't have to hide the feelings of my grief. I got the call he died, and right after that, I was on my way to an Al-Anon meeting. And I was given the three obstacles to read. And I had some big obstacles before that, you know. And I got about two lines out, and I fell apart. And I just passed it to the person next to me. Because in Al-Anon, we could do that. And I stepped back, and I allowed the tears to come. Thank you, Al-Anon, for that. And the people around me just put their arm around me and let me cry. I didn't have to hold it back. And they were able to give him a beautiful service. It was a beautiful service. I got to give respect to a guy who I finally got to know thanks to the people in Al-Anon who gave me the courage to look for him so I could have some closure. You know, tomorrow I'll get to sit with a family whose loved one committed suicide over the last couple days. And the reason I get to do that is because, again, you taught me how to have compassion. You taught me how to put my arm around them and just say, I love you. You know, I know I'm getting to the end of this thing, but the reason I bring that up is, see, you taught me those three things. You taught me how to work, you taught me how to play, and you taught me how to love. If I were to die tonight, I'd go out overpaid. I'd go out overpaid. And if you are new to the program, I hope and I pray that you stick around long enough to learn how to work, how to play, and how to love. Thanks for letting me share.
Right. Let's hear another hand for John. Thank you very much. Got about 5 minutes left. I know there are some newcomers. Would you like to say hello to us? Anybody just like to introduce themselves so we know who you are next week? And no? Anybody like to comment on John's I really like that thing about working, playing, and loving. That I play a lot. I got to get to work. Okay. Yeah, I am available. Okay, so. Is Patrick out there? I can't see him with this light. Patrick, could you read the closing and pray us out of here? And
Page 24. Thank you. I think I've got it.
Oh, what a guy. Thank you.
Got my glasses. I'm Patrick.
Hi.
In closing, I would like to say that the opinions expressed here were strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you like and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. A few special words to those who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If you try to keep an open mind, you will find help. You will come to realize that there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. We aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. Will all who care to join me in the closing with the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Keep coming back. It works, don't you know it?